Welcome back to Oh Snapped.
Hey.
Yeah, we're just watching. If you guys are watching with us, like, that's so fun.
It's so fun.
Yeah, because, like, you know which episode we're going to do next. It's like, you could totally watch it.
Yes, and if you have not listened to the ones prior, and if you want to watch with us, eBay has them.
Totally.
Season one, got them all day long on physical copies if you have a DVD player.
Yeah, you're going to have a DVD player because, sure, like, are. Digitally, you're not going to find these suckers anywhere.
Tough stuff. Yeah. Can't find them.
Totally. eBay is where you want to go. All right. So, episode 3, season 1, Clara Harris.
Claris.
Oh, okay.
Few smiles were brighter than those of Clara and David Harris.
I know it sounds like a cliche, but they had it all.
Both dentists, they shared a thriving practice.
They were both successful in the practices.
And a perfect marriage.
You saw a couple that was very much in love with each other.
Then something went wrong.
David told Clara that he was having an affair.
It was just a bump in the road of their ideal lives. A bump that would send them hurtling towards murder.
As the tire progressed across the left side of the chest, the car was supported by nothing except ribs.
Secrets, seduction, and deadly rage. Next on Snapped.
This one, I don't know if she's did this in the other ones, but the narrator starts out just like, secrets, seduction, and deadly rage. She's giving us a little preview.
Setting the scene.
Yeah. David and Clara Harris lived a charmed life. They lived in a 9,000 square foot home. Yeah. That's ginormous.
Yeah.
It's the only word you can use.
Is there enough room for their basketball court inside and at home movie theater?
Okay. Barely. Okay. But they make it work.
Okay.
You know,
modest, you know.
With what they have. They were talking about how, like, everywhere Clara looked, she could see, like, those signs of just, like, her super charmed, idyllic life or whatever.
Her semi-charmed kind of life.
It was more than semi-charmed.
Her and don't extremely charmed kind of life.
Okay. Yeah. So they're like, you know, the house and, like, granite countertops in the kitchen. I'm like, well, I have granite countertops. And they're like, a lake house, a ski chalet in Colorado, Mercedes in the driveway. I was like, okay, I don't have any of that
so stuff. Not only do we not have any of that stuff, our Barbies didn't have any of that stuff.
No, we couldn't even afford the Barbie like swimming pool thing, because I know somebody had that, so we used Tupperware dishes.
Cool Whip bowl works wonders.
Sure does. But Clara had told friends, like, she had a friend, Anna Jones, who we hear from in this episode. And Anna said that Clara told her that,
when I come down to go to work every morning, as I go down those stairs, she says, I think of my upbringing and I thank God for all that he has given me. I don't take anything for granted.
She was born in Colombia in 1957. Her father died when she was 6 years old, and it affected her tremendously. She felt that she had to be successful, I guess, like, to honor her father's memory. So I mentioned this in the last episode, but hearing about her tendencies, the way she had to, like, always achieve, do better, like, be the best she could be, she sounds very much like an Enneagram 3 to me. But a big part of it for her was, I guess, that she wanted to, like, she saw how hard her mom struggled not having her dad there anymore. And even when her dad was there, they did not come from money. So she felt like she had to do it all to, I guess, honor his memory.
Hmm.
She wanted to move to the U.S. and become successful here. So she ended up doing that. She went to school for dentistry. And one of her doctor friends said that dentistry is ideal for a female, like, wanting to get into practice of some sort, because it's not like being an ER doctor where you're on call all the time. She said that it's really great for starting a family because you get to set your own hours. You don't have a lot of nights and weekends. You know, it's pretty easy and straightforward as far as your schedule goes. And you kind of get to make it the way that you want to do it. You can be a dentist who works on the weekends, or you can be a boutique kind of practice where you're just doing like 3 days a week or whatever. So you have time for your family. So Clara met David Harris while in Houston on fellowship. David was recently divorced and he had a young daughter named Lindsay. She was like maybe 2 or 3 years old at this point. They were immediately enamored with each other. So her friend that I just talked about, Dr. Shelley Canaday, said that Clara is drop dead gorgeous. She shared a photo of, I guess, like Shelley, Clara, and some of their other friends. And they're like sitting on a couch or something. And Shelley is like, look, in this picture, like they're all good looking, but Clara is like drop dead the best looking one of us all.
Oh.
I'm like, okay. I mean, she like really thinks Clara is beautiful. They look great, but it's like, I guess the way she's describing this picture, you almost think you're going to like find a picture of like
Christie Brinkley.
Yeah. Or like bikini supermodels out for a bachelorette party. And it's just like, you know, ladies who lunch. Taking a picture together of their like weekly brunch or something. It was like, wow. You know, I was like, okay, right. I mean, they look great. Now we talked to Dr. Helen Smith, who we all know. And if you haven't heard our other episode, she's fantastic. She's a forensic psychologist. She says that women whose fathers have passed away tend to look for men who will never leave them. So they have this very strong fear of abandonment. And even though like, her dad didn't abandon her of his own choosing, necessarily. That's just the feeling that they get. And David seemed like the man that would make her his everything. So she wanted to be that, like,
the center of the universe for someone.
Yeah. Somebody, she wanted somebody who was going to dote on her, who would make her his world. And she felt like David was doing that. They were married on Valentine's Day 1992 at the Windmere Yacht Club next to the Hilton Hotel in nearby Nassau Bay. Just remember the Hilton Hotel. It's a lot.
You know they have a lot of money if they were married at the Windmere Yacht Club.
Right? And one of her friends, I can't remember which at this point, said it was like you blinked and they were married. So they had, it sounded like they had kind of a whirlwind courtship. David did not have a relationship with his daughter after his first marriage, but Clara encouraged him to rekindle that relationship. She thought it was really important that he spend time with his daughter. And it, they never say why they didn't have a relationship. It's just once he got divorced, I don't know. He didn't see her very much. He didn't talk to her very much.
Well, and you can understand why Clara would want to see that David nurtured that because she lost her own dad. So she wanted to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah. She wanted them to have that a good bond. They ended up having twin boys, Brian and Bradley. And the narrator drops a clever girl line in here. I don't even know if we explained clever girl.
I don't think we did.
Clever girl, first of all, we get that title from Jurassic Park. Remember? Clever girl. But it's just when the narrator makes a...
makes a punny. Like a fun, hilarious.
Yeah, it just, it goes too well, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So she said,
not only their future, their present was shining brighter than a freshly polished smile.
Because they're both dentists. I think he was an orthodontist, but still.
Still,
yeah. By 2001, they had their beautiful 9,000 foot square home. They had the cabin on the lake. They had the ski chalet in Colorado.
Their 9,000 square foot home.
What did I say?
They're 9,000 foot square
home. Did I?
Yeah.
No, theirs was, it was just a square.
Oh, and it had feet.
It had 9,000 feet on it. Oh my God. Wow. Thank you. Clara's friend Anna said that Clara was basically a Pinterest mom before Pinterest ever was created because she was like, she was always the host. She always had like the perfect decor. Everything was perfectly organized where it was supposed to go. Like,
so she was Monica from Friends.
Pretty much. Yes, exactly. And
always the hostess.
Yeah. But, and you know, it's got to be exhausting to always have everything. You're stressing yourself out so much. Like, anytime we have people over, you know, I'm like, everything has to be perfect. And it has to look like we don't even live here. It's like, that's not realistic.
Okay. This is an example that is a very, 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 dramatic example, but here we go. I was watching an episode of Intervention the other day because I like to bring my day down if it's too good, apparently.
Gotta
get an episode of Intervention in so I can just be real sad about it. The mom in one of the episodes, she was very much like what Clara was, or she seemed to be a lot like Clara was. And started smoking crystal meth to keep her, because it's exhausting, right? So she kept herself going that way.
Wow. So this was like a housewife.
Yeah.
Wow. Like in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Picked up meth.
She had two children, just started doing meth.
Wow.
And then the daughter found
meth.
I have no idea. The daughter ended up starting to do meth as well.
Oh, no.
I know.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Helen Smith said that Clara is so perfectionistic that she put so much pressure on herself, and she eventually felt that if anyone tried to take away her perfect life, everything she worked so hard for, she'd do literally anything to keep it.
So this is not only a perfectionistic, but it's also controlling.
Yes. Yeah. So her friend Hannah was like, okay, she's practicing 8 hours a day. She's having to make time for her kids. Like something had to give. And that was David. So there was an author, and I did not write his name down, I don't know why, who wrote a book on this case. And he said that a lot of times when married couples have a child, or couples in general have a child, that they take away attention from the other parent to give to the child. So instead of, you know, just everybody's still getting attention, it's like, I have to take away from you to give to the child. So David kind of got neglected, and the boys got everything from her. And David started doing what they said, like, a lot of men would typically do. He started working longer hours. He was gone all the time. He stopped really coming to family functions. If he did come, he was late. He just kind of withdrew. And Clara was kind of fine with that because they had this 5-year money plan. They wanted to get out of debt completely. So they had multiple practices. They wanted to own all of them and be completely debt-free in 5 years. So him working longer hours meant he was bringing in extra money. And she was like, well, that's great. And probably also she didn't have to pay attention to him. So it's like a win-win. He goes away, I don't have to deal with him, and he makes us more money. And her friend Anna was like, Clara would get up at 7 in the morning and not get home till 7 at night. And I'm like,
that's normal.
That's the dream. Like, are there people who sleep till 7 with kids?
It's funny to me to hear about different people's lives, I guess, you know, because if it's so outside of the norm for you, like I've got guests that I see or people that I see that they go from not working to having a job all of a sudden. That's got to be tough. The transition has got to be really tough. But the way that they, and everybody's got their moment, they've got to vent. But the way that they vent is so hilarious to me because they're like, oh gosh, I had to work 8 hours today and I'm in the car like for an hour a day. And I was like, that's welcome to life.
Yeah, I mean, what we in the biz call life.
Yeah, I'm sure it takes some getting used to, but it's just funny to me to hear. Yeah. Everybody's got their story, right?
Yeah, because it's like, yeah, if you're getting up at 7, first of all, like how? But if that's when you're getting up, then you still got to get ready, get to work, do the work, and then come back home. 7 p.m. is about right. If she gets up at 5, she could probably be home by 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm like, okay, well, so is everybody else. So David's feeling super neglected by his wife after the boys are born. And one of their friends said that they have like this idyllic, perfectly happy marriage until literally the kids were born. And then that's when,
wow,
it started to go bad.
That's kind of sad because, of course, if you are David, you would put two and two together and maybe start to grow some resentment towards your children.
Yeah, you would think. So, in the fall of 2001, David hired a new receptionist, Gail Bridges. This is that so typical, like, home wrecker situation. She was pretty. She was in her early 30s. You know, she's always available. She's single. She doesn't have any kids. She can come in early. She can work late. She can do whatever needs to be done.
She's breezy.
She's breezy. So it's not long after that that, oh, this another clever girl. The narrator said, Gail is doing more than just welcoming patients for Dr. Harris. I bet she was.
Oh, man.
So David starts taking Gail to hotels. And now he and his wife both work in this practice. But like they said that Gail was pretty immediately flirty with him. Like, seemed like she was trying to get in there for a while. And he never actually made the relationship physical until like May or June of the next year, something like that. So it went on for a while where it was just like tension, I guess.
Kind of like on Love Actually.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking about. So it took a while for it to progress, but once it did, he started taking her to hotels. The Hilton next to the country club where he married Clara was Ooh. Their favorite hotel to go to. And they would go to the lake house that they owned. So he'd take her up there all the time. And it seemed like Clara's friends were like, you know, Clara had no idea something was really wrong in the marriage until finally another woman, because after a while, David and Gail didn't even try to hide the affair anymore. They only tried to hide it from Lindsay, his daughter, who by now is a teenager, and from Clara. So one of the ladies at the office that had worked with both of them for a long time took Clara to dinner one night and is like, you need to talk to David because he's having an affair with Gail. And obviously, like, you don't know about it, but
how did maybe she not know about it?
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. It's like, I feel like she was neglecting her husband so much that she couldn't even tell a difference, you know? Like,
yeah.
Because he'd gotten to the point where he just wasn't even trying to hide it anymore. Yeah. And she had literally not one inkling of an idea that her marriage was on the rocks.
Wow.
But I guess it was working for her because she's viewing all of this as like, and we'll get into it. Well, we'll get into it now. So she finds out about the affair. The first thing she does is she goes home and tells Lindsay, the daughter. I don't feel like that was the right decision. Lindsay's 16, I think. 15,
That's
16.
Incredibly passive aggressive and manipulative.
Yeah. And like, way too heavy for a 16-year-old.
Well, and that's like...
She doesn't need to be involved in that.
Yeah, she's trying to get Lindsay on her side.
Yes, yeah.
By turning her against her dad.
Mm-hmm.
That is so unfair.
Yeah, and she tells Lindsay about it before she even talks to David. Like, wrong.
And I feel like for as apathetic as it seemed like Clara was in the relationship...
Now, yeah.
Yeah.
Now she's like... going all over the place about it.
Mm-hmm.
So she confronts David. He admits to the affair. He's like, yeah, it's been happening. So Clara's like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a comparison list. I want to know all the things that you like about Gail. What has drawn you to Gail?
No.
And then we'll talk about me. So one of the items that they talked about was breast size.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. And Clara's like, well, don't worry about that one. Mine's about to change. So she went and got a boob job. She dyed her hair blonde. She got liposuction. She started starving herself. She dropped 15 pounds like almost immediately. And Dr. Helen Smith was like, you know, most people would be angry to find out that their husband is cheating, but she took it as a challenge, as like, here are things that I can set my mind to accomplishing goals. If I get the surgery, if I dye my hair, if I lose this much weight, if I have this size boobs, like all these things. She made it like a business plan. And Helen Smith was like, but love is not a business plan. But I wonder if that's how Clara viewed it from the beginning. Like, I just need to find somebody that
will never leave me.
Yeah. And like, people whose only concern is achieving goals, they suppress their emotions. Like Clara, and they talk about it in this episode too, Clara has been suppressing her emotions for a long time because they can't get in the way and be obstacles to her being successful, to her building these practices, to her achieving these financial goals or whatever. So she was pretty well emotionally unavailable, I think, in her marriage. But then once she found out he was cheating on her, she's like, okay, nothing about like, I need to get in touch with my emotions. We need to talk about things. It's just, I'll get bigger boobs than her. I'll get skinnier than her. I'll have blonde hair because she's brunette. Like, I'll just try to look better. And when they show like family photos of the Harris family, you know, throughout the years or whatever, Clara looks like a Stepford wife. She doesn't look real. She doesn't even genuinely look happy. She just looks like a robot in these pictures. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like,
yikes.
That's what she looks like to me. So at first, David was like, okay, I'm going to break it off with Gail. Like, I want to make this work. But Clara wanted to have a contingency plan in case David did not follow through on his part of the deal. So she goes and hires a private investigation company. And so apparently in Texas, everything is split 50-50 in a divorce unless you can prove adultery. Then you can ask for up to 90% of the assets.
Wow.
So she wanted to have all of the adultery documented so that she would come out with the upper hand if they did get a divorce. So they assign, the company is called Blue Moon Investigations, I think, and they assign a guy named Lucas to be her investigator. So on July 24th, 2002, Clara gets a call from her private investigator, and he's like, okay, you know, just giving you an update. Everything's going great. Because she had hired them from like that Wednesday to Sunday to watch him for like several days. So he's giving her the daily update or something like that. And he's like, okay, everything's going great. I've got him. They're at a hotel. I think they're like on the fourth or the sixth floor. And I'll have the report over to you with photos sometime tomorrow afternoon. Just letting you know what's going on. She's like, great, thanks. She hangs up and she's like, absolutely no way gonna wait until the next day for this report. Because she knows which hotel they're going to, because it's the one they always go to, right next to where they got married.
Slap in the face, man.
Yeah. She takes Lindsay with her. I don't know where the boys are. Yeah. She takes Lindsay with her. She drives over to the Hilton. She looks for, because they were in Gail's Lincoln Navigator. She finds that in the parking garage and she vandalizes that with Lindsay sitting there watching. So she takes the windshield wipers and bends them and she like bashes in a bunch of other stuff. But the woman who I guess maybe owns the private investigation company was like, I tried to bend these windshield wipers and it takes almost inhuman strength. Like I couldn't do it. So I don't know how. And she's a kind of a small, like petite frame woman. So obviously her adrenaline was really pumping or something. Like
she hulked out on it.
Yeah, she totally hulked out on it. So she vandalizes the car and then she and Lindsay go into the hotel and they're walking up to the elevator. I guess they're going to go try those two. What are they going to do? Knock on every hotel room door?
It sounds like they had time and were willing to do it.
Yeah. So they're going to get into the elevator, but as they're going to get on the elevator, it opens and David and Gail step off.
Ooh.
And they're, from Clara's testimony, they're walking together, like his arm around her, you know, walking like lovers would. And, you know, Gail's got her hand kind of on his, you know, stomach wrapped around kind of thing, you know. And it's very obvious what has just occurred. I mean, why else would they be there anyway? And Clara lost it. And so she starts attacking Gail. But David intervenes and kind of holds Clara down until the security can come over. So security comes over and kicks Clara out. They're like, gotta get out of here. So Clara and Lindsay get back into Clara's car. Clara pulls out of the parking spot that she was in. And she drives over to where, so David and Gail are driving over to Gail's car. Or I'm sorry, walking to Gail's car. They're going to get in. So Clara drives over to where the car is. And she hits the Lincoln Navigator. But in doing so, she mows David down.
Ooh.
And in doing so, he flies 25 to 30 feet across two grassy medians.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Yeah, if you either watch this episode or look the case up, you'll see that parking lot. You'll see it. And the medians are very far apart. It's like where medians are separating like two separate parts of a parking lot. So he flew really far. And she keeps going. She crosses over those grassy medians and she runs over his body again.
Oh my God.
And there are eyewitnesses in the parking lot. There's just people in the parking lot who see this.
And Lindsay's in the car watching her dad get mowed
Lindsay
down.
Lindsay is in the car watching her dad. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So David Harris was pronounced dead at 9:48 p.m. He had teeth that had separated from his jaw. 6 of his right ribs were broken. And the medical examiner said that as the tires progressed across his body to the left side, so they hit his right side first, the only thing that was supporting the weight of the tires at that point was his chest cavity. So his ribs, his left rib cage just completely shattered. And his chest cavity was essentially crushed. Clara was arrested and charged with murder. But she said she didn't mean to run him over. She didn't even know he was there. It was an accident.
Was the second time also an accident?
Well, she maintains there was only one time, so we'll get into that. But what she said was that she lost it. She's driving to go hit Gail's car. And there were just people running all over the place. So she saw people running, but she didn't know. She didn't know any of them was David. She did not intentionally run over David. She knows that she did run over David, but she didn't realize it. She just thought, oops, I hit a pedestrian, maybe? I don't know, but she didn't stop.
Mm-mm.
Like, even if you say, I didn't mean to hit him in particular, well, you still drove your car through where people are at a high rate of speed, so...
And I'm going to guess... When you run somebody over, luckily I've never experienced it myself, hopefully never experienced anything like that before. If I ran over a Coke can,
oh my gosh,
you feel it.
Yeah, exactly. I ran over a water bottle the other day and
it was like you're off-roading.
Yeah, it really scared me and I was like, what was that? And Andrew was like, I think it was just that water bottle over there, but we were pulling into the park to go for a walk and there's kids around. I was terrified. What if I hit somebody, you know? Like,
you know when you've run over anything.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly. Even something as small as a water bottle or a Coke can. Clara is banking on the fact that, okay, yeah, there were eyewitnesses, but like it was dark and whatever. And so she maintains, I only hit him one time. And furthermore, I had no idea he was even there particularly. But she forgot that she hired a private investigator. And the private investigator was there. And he got the whole thing on tape. The whole thing.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. So on January 23rd, 2003, her murder trial began. Her defense said that the only thing she wanted to hit was Gail's car. And her friend, Dr. Shelley Canaday, was like, I mean, look, her rage has always been directed at the car and not at the people. She, as soon as she got to the hotel, she found the car and vandalized it. So obviously she's just trying to kill the car. It's just the car. And I'm like...
Well, she wasn't trying to attack the car when she lunged at Gail.
Exactly. When she went in and tried to confront them and tried to attack her in the hotel. Exactly. That's a people, not a car, Shelley. I thought you were a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Even I know that.
Exactly. Like, no. If that's what you're basing it on... You can't because she attacked Gail already. So.
And I'm willing to believe that in the moment, Clara, it was just a crime of passion. Like she just lost her mind.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the definition of snapped.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't believe nobody in this episode said, and she just snapped.
Because she literally, that's the moment.
That is the moment, yeah. But if you watch the videotape, I mean, it looks like, you know, she's driving the initial hit because he flies so far. She continues to go in that circle and that's where he's hit again. And the medical examiner says he's hit twice because of the nature of his injuries. Like,
there's no way that could have been inflicted with one time running him over, right. Maybe.
Now, the defense says that there's only one set of tire prints on David's body, which is a horrific thing to even think about and have to argue over. But they say there's only one set of tire prints. And so
if she had run him over twice, how could she have gotten the same exact tire print?
Yeah, because the prosecution says, placement. Well, it's possible that she just, yeah, lined him up exactly right. And her friend Anna was like, there's no way.
As someone who has the most anxiety about going to get my car washed and having the tires line up correctly. And that's someone who's guiding me. And it's not, I would have a hard time hitting something twice, same exact way.
Right. I'm wondering if, and I don't know, but because there's two sets of tires, you know, there's your front tires and your back tires. If she continues over him, is that what makes it seem like she essentially backed up and did it again? But if when she hit him the first time and he flew 30 feet, if he flew, that's, she would hit him and he'd fly, not run over him and then he'd fly, right?
So she hit him at first, then maybe ran over him a second time. So maybe didn't run over him twice, but still.
Yeah, maybe hit him once and then ran over him. So the tire prints are from where she ran him over, but that was after she already hit him once, struck him once.
That's striking him twice with a car.
Yes. Yeah. So I think the defense is trying to split hairs. I get maybe that's what they have to do. But to me, that still doesn't make any sense. You struck him twice with your vehicle.
Yeah.
He was already down. Why did you go near him again?
Mm-hmm.
You should have stopped the car at that point. Yeah. She didn't try to run away. She just kept running over him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know. So she's really fighting on this. You know, there's only one set of tire prints. And she has a lot of supporters still. Like, her friends still support her and stuff like that. They're like, no, that's not the way it happened. But she wasn't the only one in the car. Lindsay was there, David's daughter, who was 16 at the time. And when all of this was going on and her dad was having an affair, she was on Clara's side. She supported Clara. She felt like her dad was doing the wrong thing. She was always really close to Clara. I mean, from her memory, Clara had been in her life. But when she was in the car with her, running her dad over, she didn't support Clara anymore. So she got on the stand and was like, yeah, I felt the car running over my father. And I knew that he was under the car. It was not a secret, you know, because Clara was trying to maintain that.
She didn't know who it was.
Yeah, she just couldn't be sure who it was. It was just kind of chaos or whatever. And Lindsay's like, no, it was my dad. And I knew it was my dad and she knew it was my dad. So that's definitely pretty damning information. The jury did find her guilty of intentional murder. And of course, Clara broke down in tears.
Did she cry at all before this, I wonder?
I don't know. I didn't see her, but because these are short episodes.
Well, of course, right? But it's just interesting to me, if she did not, that the only time she got emotional was when it had to do with her.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of wouldn't doubt that. Ironically, her verdict was handed to her on her anniversary. It was Valentine's Day.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she was sentenced to 20 years in prison, which was the maximum sentence allowed by the jury's sudden passion finding. So they did find,
you know, it was a crime of passion.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was fined $10,000 in addition to her sentence. And she was denied parole in her first attempt on April 11th, 2013. And her second parole request was also denied in September 2016. However, in November 2017, she was granted parole. So on May 11th, 2018, she was released on parole, and she's going to stay on parole until February 2023, and then she'll be fully released. In 2018, when she was released on parole, Blue Moon Investigations released an audio recording of the moment that Clara learned that there was a video recording of the murder. So this, I thought this was interesting. So Clara, she's been arrested. They didn't release it till after she was released on parole, but the time of the recording is 2002. She's been arrested at this point. And the woman, Bobby Baca, is the person who they had interviewed in this episode. She said, she's just so calm. You never would have known she was arrested. Never. So Clara calls the company. And what she's trying to do is she's trying to get the tape from them. Because obviously it's damning information. Like, To me, her trying to get that tape away from them, if she did in fact only run over him once or whatever, like she says, or she hit him once and didn't know and didn't run over him a second time, why is she trying to get this tape so hard? Because she would be like, well, the tape's going to prove it, right? But she's working really, really hard to get the tape from the investigation company. And this is an article from KHOU11. I'll link to it. But Bobby Baccia says, we did tape record everything. As soon as we get that information, we can make that available to you and your attorney. Videotape? Clara Harris asks. Yes, ma'am. We have everything. You know, but we don't have it in our possession because of the incident that occurred, Baccia says. Clara says, so he was there through all the tragic parts? And Bobby Baccia says, the investigator did video everything because you did hire us to video the subject. Clara stayed calm and the tone of her voice was unemotional throughout the conversation, but Baccia believed that at one point during the exchange, Clara nearly made a confession. Bobby says, maybe this upset you enough to where, you know, you just lost it. Right, Clara responds. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you, Baccia said. Thank you. Thank you. This has been a horrible, bad thing, Clara Harris said. I know. Are your twins okay? Baccia asks. They are okay up to this point, Harris says. Harris returns to more questions about the content of the videotape. You don't have the tape there, so you can't get a hold of it for me? Harris asks. Yeah, the police took everything because it's a criminal case, Baccia said. Harris finishes the five-minute conversation asking about the possibility of a refund for the investigative services she had purchased now that her husband is dead.
Oh.
One last thing, Harris said. I had paid, obviously, like for the Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and I didn't get to read into your contract agreement if there's a cancellation refund. The way the contract reads, if a client shows up on the scene like the way that you did, all retainers and monies are non-refunded, and I'll tell you why, as you have found out the hard way. When there's a client on the scene, it jeopardizes our investigators, it jeopardizes the subject, and it jeopardizes our client. I think she held her own there pretty well. She's like, and let me tell you why. Because you showed up acting like a crazy person and you ran your husband over. So exactly. Obviously that's not safe. You're not supposed to show up where we are. So no, you're not going to get your money back. Are you serious?
Oh my gosh.
And she turned that into the investigators right away. And it was, but the investigator or the prosecutor chose not to use it during the trial. And I mean, obviously, they just had enough to convict her without that tape. They had the videotape, so they didn't necessarily need that. Yeah. But
that is interesting, though.
The freaking gall of that woman to ask for
a refund.
She's like, well, you were supposed to video from like Wednesday to Friday, but he didn't live that long. So, I mean, can I get the day back that I didn't use or?
Is there some sort of loophole where if you kill the person that you are investigating, that the contract is null and void and I get my money back?
Or? Right, exactly. Like, are you serious? Ugh.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's out and about now.
It doesn't hurt to ask.
That's true.
Right?
Doesn't hurt to ask. Yeah. Oh, and her friend Anna that
thinks that she's drop-dead gorgeous.
No, that was the other one.
Oh, that was Shelley.
Yeah, Anna was the one who was like, you know, she would wake up at 7 and not get home till 7.
Yes.
I think she was like, lived nearby them as well, but she ended up getting custody of David and Clara's twin boys.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so she raised them, and the boys have visited their mom. Like, they visited their mom once a month ever since it happened. So I don't know if they have like a relationship with her now, but they at least did. Like, Anna brought them to visit once a month. So,
I mean, it is sad because at this point they've essentially lost both their parents. So,
Yeah, it's really sad.
But I guess Clara's out now.
Yeah.
On parole. So, I don't know. At the very least, you just hope that they can reignite a relationship and try to salvage some of the years that they didn't have together.
Yeah. And I also read an article that it is possible that she would get her dental license reinstated now that she's on parole. So, she may still be able to practice dentistry. But I mean, if she doesn't, like, what's she going to do for work?
Right. Because at this point, she's been in jail for how long? Had been in jail,
15 years?
That's a long, like, what do you do? The world's changed so much in that amount of time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 2000, what, 3s when she went in. I mean, that was like Nokia bar phones.
Yeah. That was digital cameras.
Yeah. That was what's an emoji?
What's a meme?
What's a Snapchat?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there you have it. Yikes. So that was the outside or the vital information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The reenactment rejects, there were a lot of really steamy stock photos of like a secretary and her boss, like sitting on the desk. It's getting inappropriate.
Then you see something like skirt kind of pushed up type of moment. Yeah, skirt
kind of pushed up. You might see like the pantyhose, you know, where it starts and
like a garter or something,
and all that. Yeah, I was like, okay, snap.
We get it.
Yeah, we get it.
Okay, casting. Let's do casting.
Oh, casting, right. I think, is his name Kevin Nealon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like he could play David Harris.
Okay.
I mean, don't you think?
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like for Clara, would we do like a Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Okay. I could see that.
Salma Hayek?
Hmm.
They're both beautiful, striking ladies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I could definitely see those.
Would you cast her? Gail. We need Gail.
Oh, yeah. We need Gail. I could also see Melanie Griffith as Clara Harris.
Okay.
A little bit. I don't know. She's got like a little face.
Yeah. So maybe let's say Melanie Griffith as Clara and then maybe Rooney Mara.
As Gail.
As Gail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks for hanging with us. And, you know, we'll be back next week for episode 4.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.